On va reprendre un prêt. Voilà Dufault? Oui, bonjour. Non, je suis en interview maintenant. Oui. Bonjour. Merci, au revoir.
All right, it's bonus episode time. I'm your host, Stephen Pulverant, and this is Hodinkee Radio. So, just last week, a few members of Team Hodinkee found themselves driving along the winding, scenic roads of the Vallée du Jou. This is real watchmaking country, and it has been for centuries. When you think of someone toiling away in front of a window, looking out over rolling green hills with their loop over their eye and a mechanical marvel in front of them, you're thinking of this place. And more specifically, you're probably thinking of someone like master watchmaker Philippe Dufour. Dufour is definitely in contention for the title of greatest living watchmaker, and he creates nearly every component of his watches himself, all under the roof of a single workshop. Our editor-in-chief Jack Forrester had the rare opportunity to sit down with Philippe in his workshop to talk about what it takes to make a watch the old-fashioned way, the future of fine watchmaking, and what brands Philippe thinks are doing it right. So, without further ado, here are Jack and living watchmaking legend Philippe Dufour.
Philippe, the last time I saw you, it's kind of amazing to be here, just because I've seen your work, obviously, many times.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen a lot of pictures of this place.
Yes.
But I've never had a chance to actually come here and visit you at home.
Yeah. So, you're welcome.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
And I think the last time I saw you was last November at the Grand Prix Horlogerie de Genève.
Exactly, yeah.
How do you like being on the jury there?
I like it. It's interesting because it's force you to see a lot of watches, which normally I don't look at it because sometimes it's too many, you know?
Yeah.
So it forces you and to, I wouldn't say analyze, but I mean to check every watch and to see what could be important and so on, depending on the category. And this is nice. And also what is nice about that, it's in the jury, it's a melting pot. Okay, and I learn also a lot from these different people when we're changing places, you know.
Yeah,
I think
sure.
it's a good idea. And for example, you have somebody who is very good in the diamond setting and so on, you know. And when we judge a lady's watch with diamond, you say, "Wow, it's nice," and show you, he said, "Look, the diamonds are perfect. It's the first quality. But look, the setting is horrible."
Yeah, it's funny you should say that because I sat next to someone who knows a lot about diamonds.
Yeah,
he knows a lot about setting. And, you know, I mean, I love the mechanism.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of what I'm interested in.
Yeah.
But I got a great education. In like 15 minutes, he gave me a great education.
Exactly.
And yeah, so you learn so much.
You learn, okay? And you have the point of view from people who are not really in the technique or in the watch industry, but who are a consumer or collectors. It gives you another reflection.
For sure.
And this, I like that. And as a watchmaker, I can also give some information regarding what is inside the watch, because it's also important.
Yeah. It's also, I mean, for me, it's a good reminder that not everybody looks at watches the same way I do.
Yeah.
Like, there's other ways of looking at them.
Yeah.
And, you know, something that I don't think it's interesting, but, you know, it's important in a market that's not the U.S. It's important to people whose tastes are different, but it doesn't mean they're wrong.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh, I like that. It's a good atmosphere.
So when you you go to the GPHG, you have a chance to see a lot of different watches, and you also I assume you pay attention to what's going on in the watch industry overall.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the last the last few years have been they've been kind of difficult for the Swiss watch industry, and you know, when times are tough, people try to figure out what's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of people with a lot of opinions about why these challenges are there. Some people blame the brands. Oh, your quality is not so good anymore. You're making too many watches. You got greedy, blah, 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 blah. What do you think?
It's a big subject.
Yeah, sure.
Yes, I think I cannot talk about watchmaking as a lot. I can talk about the high-end
watches,
you know. And I think I said it already during an interview. For the hand watches, we have to put the human back inside the watch. Because today the people have more and more knowledge because of the media, modern media, internet, forum and everything. They know more and more, very often more than the salespeople, you know. And what they are searching, it's a kind of traceability. They want to understand how, who made that, how and so on.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think it's important when you want to spend a big amount of money, you have to understand what it's all about.
Yeah, but this isn't the way the brands are used to operating. You know, they want you to think the watch just appears by magic. Yeah. And I think now they're starting to realize,
yes, you know,
that they have to change.
But when you see when they launch a new product, you see the product, a small teaser, a small video, boo, you see the watch coming out from the fog, you know. It's not even the watch, it's virtual, okay?
Yeah.
And then you see some CNC machine,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
with 25 tools working with oil. And you want to make people dream about your watch? Come on.
Yeah.
Something is missing. I always say something, you have to be open, more open. And I give you an example. If you visit a factory, most of the factory today, if you visit, if you are, you can go inside because you're a special person, you know. I mean for them, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
But for most of the people, you visit, you go along and the people are in aquarium, okay? And you have some explanation, here we do that, we here we do that.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
It's okay if you have some kids. Okay, but when you have important people who are able to buy your product, you have to be more open. And I give you as an example, for example, the person can go inside the watch shop and he goes to the person, to the woman who is doing the réglage, the hairspring work, you know?
Yeah.
He's going to look at this person and she's going to show him how he's doing, how he's making the Breguet work good and blah, blah, blah. He's going to make a pictures. Going to make a selfie with her, you know, the day he has a watch, his watch.
Yeah, yeah.
The watch works twice, mm-hmm, because he knew the person who made the heart of the watch.
Right.
And
right,
he can show their friend, you see, this is the person on your iPhone. Mm-hmm. This is the person who made the heart of my watch.
Yeah, yeah.
We have to put more human.
Yeah, it's difficult though. Well, one of the things that I think about, you know, if you're a Philippe Dufour and you have people who want your watches, mm-hmm, and they want your watches because they know that you're making, mm-hmm, them the way you want to make,
yeah,
them.
Yeah.
This is one thing. But if you're a brand and you're part of a big group and you're publicly traded, you have shareholders.
Yeah, yeah.
There's so much pressure.
I know.
You know, you want to make price go up, you want to, mm-hmm, make cost go down. One way you make cost go down, mm-hmm, is you cut corners. You get rid of people, you do more machines, and if you're, mm-hmm, not careful, mm-hmm, at some point you don't have no story left to tell.
Yeah. Yeah, I know it's something is surprising also today. It's when I compare with when I was coming out of the school watchmaking, yeah, school. When I worked at Jaeger during my first year, you had the technical part, the production, and you have the commercial part. They were close to each other. They knew, everybody knew each other. The people from the commercial knew what we were doing and so on, okay? Today is no more like that. Everything is separate. Even sometimes they are not even in the same building, in the same town, okay? So they don't know anymore what's going on, mm, inside the factory. And on the commercial side, what happened today, since years, we try to cut down the prices by reducing the quality.
Right.
You know, the, how do you call that? The quality criteria, the
right,
visual quality,
right,
that are changing. And when I talk with some watchmaker of my age, they are really scared because today the criteria is 30 centimeters open, a naked eye.
Right.
So if you have a scratch on a screw, you don't see it. A little scratch on a dial, you don't see it. So you can leave the watch.
Right. So just to clarify, The criteria today for most brands for luxury watches is yes. if you look at it from 30 centimeters away, yeah. naked eye, if you don't see anything,
yeah.
it's okay.
It's okay.
But you don't see it. You don't see a lot if you're looking for.
I know. That's the problem.
Yeah.
Why it costs less like that. And on the other hand, because I was telling you the marketing people, I don't know anymore what's going on the production side, they're giving a present to their customer. What do they give? A loop.
Oh boy. Yeah.
Hey, give a loop, the stick to be beaten.
Yeah. that's an interesting way to put it. I mean, I've been looking at watches closely since, I mean, I started getting interested in watches when you moved into this, when you started in the studio in about 1995. And you know, it was very hard then, it was pretty hard to see a really, really high-end watch. You know, yes. you had to know people or... But you look at a movement under a loop, and it's 1995, and it's from a big name.
Yes.
I'm not going to say any names, yeah. but it's from a big name. And you're looking at something really beautiful.
Yeah.
And, you know, now sometimes I put a loop on a movement, you know, again, from a big name, a big house, yeah. famous around the world.
Yeah.
And, you know, the anglage, it's like, it looks like it was done by someone who was very bored, or maybe by a machine. The Côte de Genève, it's, you know...
Very deep.
Too deep. And even the movement is dirty.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, how did this happen?
I don't know it happened, but it's also probably because the work is organized, again, to be cheap as possible. Is organized in separate things, okay, and so you can hire people without knowledge, and you show them how to put this wheel, this bridge with two screws. Then it gives to you know, for most of the even the watchmaker, I see some young watchmakers are bored, you know.
Yeah,
they learn 4 years. You know, and sometimes I saw some young guys, since 2 years, are in the same factory putting dial and hands. Okay, yeah. And beside them, they have a young girl coming from over the border, 70 years old. She's doing the same job as him, but much cheaper.
Yeah, yeah.
You see, so it helps you to understand why, the quality is going down.
Yeah, so I mean, if I'm a young man, which I'm not anymore, but, you know, if I were a young man, I studied 4 years to be a watchmaker. Mm-hmm. I'm not, a little naive. I love watchmaking. And mm-hmm. I go to my first job, and month after month, year after year, all I get to do is put in two screws mm-hmm. or put on hands.
Yeah.
I leave the business.
Yeah.
I'd rather go work in pharma.
Yeah, exactly. You
know? Or as you were saying before, put on the orange suit and sweep the street.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's sad.
Yeah. Yeah, but there's not there. There are so few people left who work like yourself who really mm-hmm. make the whole watch,
yeah.
beginning to end, mm-hmm. including the finish. It's just not the way watches are made anymore.
No.
Yeah. And the industry, you know, when you so you're the first watch, the very first watch that you made for yourself. I think we were just looking at the movement. That's the you made a Grand Sonnerie.
Yeah, Grand Sonnerie mini Jupiter wristwatch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that was...
In 1992. Yeah.
And then nobody had ever seen anything like this before.
No. It was a big surprise.
So what made you decide... I mean, this is... even today, if I'm a brand, you know, with a $1 billion company behind me, this would... And computers and CNC, this would be a crazy thing to do. And you did it. You did it by yourself without any of this stuff.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
I mean, of course, the modern technology can help you. But what is important is the component coming out of could be a hand operated machine or a CNC machine. This component, if you use it the way it is not enough.
Right.
So you have to add something, and this something you add it by hand.
Right.
It's not, and even the hand gives you, something probably less accurate than a CNC machine. Because mm-hmm. CNC machines are very accurate, but it gives you this hand finish. It's like a painting, you know. If you have a painting made by a robot,
yeah,
maybe
yeah.
A okay? But if it's hands doing that, you can feel it.
Right.
And I see the people who are owning my watches, they feel something when they look at the movement.
And this is what we want.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But it's not an emotion.
Yeah.
Yes. I give you an example. Something happened to me 2 years ago in Japan. I was there to give a lecture to the school. The third time I go there, it's marvelous to be there because you have 20 students for 1 week, but they kill me, you know. But I mean,
really? How?
Yeah, they want to know. They want to beautiful, you know, and polite and respect.
Yeah.
Nothing to say. And as I was there, the shop shellman who sold most of the Simplicité in Japan, he told me, while you are here, spend 2 days in the shop. So he invited all his customer. These people, I met them 10 years ago sometime.
Yeah.
They came in the shop, recognized the kids were like that. Now they are big. We make photos. They're wearing the watch, explaining me how they live with their watch. You know, very marvelous moment. And one guy arrived and told me he's the doctor. And
his office.
He has all pictures of my watches. Mm-hmm. He has all the magazine because there was a lot of beginning of the 2000, we had a lot of Japanese magazine who make report from the workshop. So he has everything, and he explains to his patient where the watch is coming from.
Right.
And he told me he has some patient very sick, cancer, end of life, and he let them wear the Simplicité for a while, and he told me they are happy for a moment.
Yeah.
And asked me to sign 2 pictures of his patient, you know.
Oh, wow.
Wearing the Simplicité and you have eyes, brilliant eyes, you know.
That's an amazing story.
Yeah, you don't know what to answer. It's just, it was very, very, very difficult. But when I came back in my workshop, I was sitting on my bench, and I said, it's just marvelous because I still have a lot of pleasure to finish a watch. Every time, it's like a new baby, you know?
Yeah, but you know, when you make a watch, and you're just thinking about making the watch when you make the watch, but it goes out into the world.
Yeah.
And sometimes it really makes these moments that are important in people's lives.
Exactly. And I said, for me, I'm still a lot of pleasure. Every time a watch is finished. I said, if this watch can give pleasure to somebody around the world, it's just marvelous. Circle is closed, you know.
Yeah, yeah. How long do you want to keep doing this?
Well, as long as possible.
Yeah.
Because, I don't know. I don't know. Maybe 5-10 years, I don't know. I don't have any health problem. My hands are okay. My eyes are still okay. Yeah. So, and I still have pleasure to do it.
So why stop?
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, and as independent, you don't have any money coming from the factory, you know. So you have also to think for the future. And I have, I'm remarried, and my new wife, she has a daughter. She's 17 now. And since the age of 13, I ask her, what do you want to do in the life? And she said, I want to learn to become watchmaker. I said, come on, it's not for you. It's an old profession. During 2 years, she told me that.
Yeah.
And one day I said, you really want to do that? She said, yes, okay, let's do it. So she made some tests, Yeager Court, the school, AP, and also. Finally, she had 2 possibilities, either the school or to learn at AP. And I say, the school is better, it's more neutral.
Yeah.
And now she's starting the third year.
Mm-hmm.
So, and in her mind, she wants to come here.
Yeah, she does. She wants to come here.
Yeah.
But I think maybe it's not an easy thing to be the student of Philippe Dufour.
No, not easy. But she has, I think, a strong character enough to finds the old guy.
You know, I mean, I think about, I've talked to Roger, you know, Roger Smith.
Yeah.
And, you know, George Daniels was, he was not, you know, he was not, what, how do you say it? He was not a teddy bear.
Yeah, no.
But Rogers was just—he just wanted to learn, and he didn't care what he had to do.
Exactly. Yeah. So we'll see for the future.
Yeah. Well, because you want to pass on.
Yes.
You don't want what you don't want your light to go out.
No, it will be shame to stop what I've started. You know.
Yeah. So you know that story that you told. It happened in Japan. Took place in Japan. And
yes.
You know, one of the things that. You're famous for is you actually worked with people at Grand Seiko,
mm-hmm.
and you actually taught them some things that you know about high quality movement
mm-hmm.
finishing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, maybe you could. Well, how did that relationship develop? Did they just show up one day at your door?
No, I met one of the team during exhibition in Chelmen.
Oh, okay.
So and finally. They ask, could we come, and so on.
Yeah. Did you say at first, no, I'm not so sure I want to...
No, no problem.
Yeah.
Because, you know...
Because some Swiss watchmakers, they would say, no, I only want to teach a Swiss person.
Yeah, I know. But, I mean, the Swiss, they don't come to me.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
So I want to keep everything for myself.
Yeah. And if you have to go to Japan, go to Japan.
Yeah.
What was it like going over there and working with them? How were they to work with?
Well, I never worked with the people in Seiko.
No.
But I mean, I go to give a lecture to the school.
Yeah.
To the school,
right.
Yeah. But if somebody come here in the shop and ask me how you do that, I say it's no secret. Because I've been facing that. You see the equipment I have, all this old machine, the use guide of this machine are in the cemetery.
Yeah.
You know? So I have to try all by myself to find the best way to use this machine. And the cemetery are full of secrets because that was the way the Swiss watchmaker, they were hiding everything, you know, keeping for themselves.
Yeah.
No transmission.
Yeah.
So today, I think watchmaking is no more valid, is no more Swiss, is universal.
Right.
And I realized by the different experiences I had working in Germany, in England, even in the U.S. Virgin Island, in the 70s, we were making watches in the U.S. Virgin Island. You know?
Yeah. That's wild. Wow, that's wild.
You know. So and over there, I realized. I stop thinking, it's only Valley de Joux, it's worldwide. And when you see what happened around the world, the product coming out from Germany, from Japan, from everywhere, even from China, the Chinese watchmaking is improving every day more. So, you know, we're not the only one anymore.
But it's true. I mean, what you say that the cemetery is. You said the cemetery is full of secrets, and so much has been lost.
Exactly.
And there are ways of working that you know people forget. I mean, you know, chiming watches, the Grand Sonnerie, the minute repeater, and it's not just the movement construction, the case construction also, right? Like, so if you're making a chiming watch, I mean, one of the things I've heard is. You have to make the case a certain way if you want the best sound.
Yeah. And this is lost.
Yeah. It's lost.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Nobody knows how to do it anymore?
No. It's not teach anymore. Yeah. I remember when I made the first Grand Sonnerie pocket size for this big brand in Brazil.
Who shall remain unnamed.
I had to find a case maker. And I found one in Chautefort where it's still... He has all equipment to make this, you know, and to make the back of the case. It's not just stamped. It's you know. It's and the cases he made give a nice resonance, you know, because for a repeater the case has to function to protect the movement and also to increase the sound of the repeater. And today this is lost.
Yeah.
Because when you check the old pocket watches, you know, an Aristo during 5 years, many, and every time I had one with a beautiful sound, I used to check the way the case was done, you know?
Yeah.
And even the base of the case, I mean the ring, okay, of the case, is not
the circumference of the
yes, yeah. is not from a round piece. It was from a plate. And they put it on a, what do you call that, you know, do like that.
Mm-hmm. On a roller.
Like a yeah. roller, and it's a flat piece, and it, when it goes out of the roller, it's like a U shape, mm-hmm. okay? Then they put it round, they solder it, mm-hmm. and then they rectify it to have perfectly round. Yeah. Though the vein of the metal is like that, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
It's already, it's like, I said to the case maker, it's like if you make a violin on your Sensi machine. You take a piece of wood, you program your machine, it's going to be perfect. To the hundreds of millimeter, it will be perfect, but dead. Yeah. Because it didn't respect the vein of the wood and the kind of the wood.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of the things I've heard about making cases for repeaters. If you if you just stamp the metal, it's, as you say, it's perfect, but dead.
Yeah.
But if you work the metal, as you say, the vein of the metal yeah. changes, the crystal yeah. structure of the metal
exactly.
changes.
Exactly.
Yeah, like it becomes a work yeah. hardened.
Yeah. yeah. If you take most of the pocket watches with the repeater of the old one, if you take just the back is made in two parts. You have the bezel mm-hmm. with the hinge, go yeah. like that, yeah. and inside the back itself, it's first stamp around flat piece, then it's pushed on a lace with wooden shape, mm-hmm. and it's like a burnish, you know, they press it to get the right
the curve
yeah. and then so the material is on tension. Okay. Right. Then they press it in the bezel and they solder it. Mm-hmm. And when you take your back, you just knock like that, and it's just chiming like
bing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So it's like it's almost like making a drum, isn't it?
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. But this is a lot of extra steps.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes, and yes. it takes a person a lot of practice. Mm-hmm. They have to be taught by someone who knows.
Exactly.
And, you're a big brand yeah. with shareholders. Mm-hmm. You want to find someone who can do this, mm-hmm. or you want to just get the machine to go.
Exactly.
Watchmaking has changed so much from when you came into the studio in 1995. Mm-hmm. I feel like watchmaking had just started to change into what it is today. And you know, the Swiss watch industry as an industry, like we're lucky we can talk about, I mean, I feel lucky because I've seen some unbelievably beautiful watches still, it's very rare now, but you know, the stuff you make, the stuff Roger Smith makes, you know, stuff really made by hand by someone who says, I'm not gonna do things different because it's cheaper.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
If we want the Swiss watch industry to stay alive, we're talking about industrial watchmaking. You know, I think a lot of people don't understand. You buy a watch from a big brand that makes 500,000 watches a year. It has to be an industry. Mm. And if we want to keep this industrial base alive, you can't make watches. They can't make watches the way you do, or there's no industry anymore.
I know. It's what to do.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the one thing they have to adjust is the real price of the product, because the margin is so enormous.
Yeah.
You know, the cost you multiply by 10.
Yeah.
Okay. It's too much. I mean, the person who buys such watch, he doesn't have, I mean, for the money, I would say.
He's not getting value for the money.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen, you know, since I first got interested in watches in the, you know, mid, late 1990s, mm-hmm. you know, I think about a simple dress watch. Gold,
yeah,
nice movement,
yeah,
nothing, no complications,
yeah.
time only, from a big name,
yeah,
you know, we'll just pick any big name, and that watch in 1995, 96, 97, this is maybe a $5,000-$6,000
yeah.
watch,
exactly,
and now it's a $25,000 yeah. watch, and I'm pretty sure it's the same watch,
yeah, you know? It's the same watch, probably less, the finishing is not as good as yours,
Yeah, exactly.
Probably.
Exactly.
Because we always try to cut down the cost.
So you think the industry is going to shrink?
No, I don't think so. Because, I mean, it's enough. No, it's enough blind people around the world to buy the watch.
There are enough blind people around the world to keep the industry. Oh, boy.
No, yeah. I mean, so...
I suspect you're absolutely right, but, I mean, it makes me sad because people forget what the standard should be.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, when I see a watch that comes from a, you know, a big, old, famous name, you know, incredible history, you know, to quote you. And I see that the work is just, it's not good, you know? And I can't, as someone who loves watches and who writes about them, you know, I understand that people have to make a living, you know, fine, but like I can't, as a writer, I can't defend it. You know, what do I say?
Yeah. It's true, and I think maybe more and more, because today people who can appreciate, can see the difference, is very small percentage around the world. You know, the people who goes to Singapore buying watch, asking, may I see the watch in the window? You put the watch on the tray, taking the watch, taking the loop out of the pocket, and say to the salesman, tell me it's finished my hand, we can see it's all vibrate, it's okay. You have these people, but it's not, of course, the majority. It's a very small percentage. But probably this percentage will grow.
Yes.
Will grow with the year because of the modern media and so on. And this is a bit scary because, more and more people will recognize what is nice or what is not so good.
Right.
You know?
Right.
The knowledge, is growing. On the consumer side.
And I think it's very dangerous too, because, you know, to buy a really nice, real luxury watch, you know, or what's supposed to be a real luxury watch nowadays, it's become very, very expensive. And maybe somebody, they fall in love with watches. They wait 6 months, they buy their first good watch, again, from a big name, and they take it home. And maybe 6 months later, they have a problem. And they bring it back, and it costs 25% of what it costs to buy the watch to fix a simple problem. Where they learn a little bit about finishing, and they start to look at the back, and they say to themselves, "I thought this was so nice, but it's not so nice." So the industry is in trouble if it keeps making things that people. If somebody has that kind of experience where the watch becomes a source of regret. They're going to go away, and they're never going to come back.
It's true. And also, if we talk about the Swiss watchmaking, something could happen today in some countries, some markets, is still the reference. In Asia, for example, the young generation, the 25, 30, 35, they dream about what? You know, a BMW, Audi, Mercedes, okay?
Right.
And a Swiss watch.
Right.
Okay. Now, even they are worried in some market like Singapore, because the generation are going faster and faster, shorter and shorter, and they are worried because in the younger one, these references maybe are different. It's still the German car, but it could be the German watches.
Right.
Because in their mind, a country made in Germany, you know, they make cars so strong, so beautiful car. I'm sure their watches are also good and so on.
And
they are.
And their watches are actually pretty good.
That's scary.
I mean, you're not wearing a Swiss watch. You're wearing a Lange.
Not today, no.
It could happen some other day. Yeah.
I remember I saw that at Basel. It was in the... They were exhibiting at Basel, and you had this big booth... like a big gray house, you know? And there's some window. In the window, you had the datograph movement, a scale 20 or something. And I look at that. Wow, I see, marvelous, the way it's done. And I went inside and I saw the watch. And it's exactly the same. And it's what I call the trilogy, Blumlein trilogy. Because it was his idea. Blumlein was a really great person. We lost him too early. But when they relaunched Lange, He became in charge of, in the Richemont Group, in charge of Lange, IWC, and Jägerkut. And he put everybody to his place. Okay, so Jägerkut look backwards what you did and say, oh, we did reverso. Okay, they start to make reverso. Same thing with IWC. And Lange, they say, okay, we're going to make something real German. And the three watches, Lange won. Tourbillon Pulmerite and Datograph, it was his idea. And it was a good choice. I mean, it's just amazing what they did. And when I heard Lange Sonet has been bought by Richemont Group, because I knew Lange Sonet by pocket watches when I restored, and I knew their quality, this little difference, okay? Very, very high quality. And when I heard that has been bought by Richemont, Jägerkut, they're going to make Lange watches with L'Occult movement. That was my worry. And when I saw the first Lange one with their three-quarter bridge, I said, wow, they did it, you know? And this is great, I mean, to respect the style and the tradition. It's nice.
You know, and again, I think about what's interesting to me, and it doesn't have to be what, you know, not every, people don't have to be interested in what I'm interested in. But I look at the auction market, where what determines the price of a watch is almost 100% cosmetics, how the watch looks, you know, and we have these funny words, tropical dial.
Yeah.
You know, like whatever.
I'm lost in that. I'm lost.
Thank God. I'm so glad you said that, because me too.
Yeah, because what do you think about the 3244? I don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
You know, it's a black dial with a little, something is missing on the right, and come on. No, yes.
Yeah.
I'm lost, you know. But what I would say. But it's still some interesting brand. Who are following a line. I give you an example. Some people, some young people ask me sometimes, they want to start collecting watches.
Yeah.
They ask me for advice. I say, okay, you can buy a Rolex. Rolex, it's a reliable, good quality for the price. And
still good quality for the price.
Of course.
Yeah.
And they are not telling you rubbish, okay? Because they don't tell you it's finished by hand like 100 years ago and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. No, yeah. We know the way it's done. It's a kind of perfection, the way. And all the components are 100% checked and so on.
Yeah.
And the result, if you have a reliable watch. And right. I said to young one, but this is, you have no risk, okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and on any level, you buy it; it's going to work.
Exactly.
And it's not. You just said it's a kind of perfection.
Yes.
It's not the perfection of someone like you. You know, 50 years. Experience hand finishing, but
they don't tell you anything.
They don't tell you that.
Okay.
That's right.
It's different with some other brand. You know?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
And very strong also in the after service. Because, of course, they don't launch 35 different models every year or different movement.
Right.
But, I mean, they assure the after service. And you can go anywhere in the world, Singapore, Hong Kong, your Rolex centers, all the equipment the same. The benches are made here in the Valley du Jura, you know, all the benches.
Yeah. Well, really?
Yeah.
Every bench in every Rolex boutique.
Yes.
Yeah, that's amazing.
It's made here. So you have a real service. So, and the second brand I advise for to the young people, I say you can buy a nice watch is Nomos. It's German, and also it's something they don't cheat. They tell you what it is. They don't tell you blah 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 blah. And the product itself is very interesting. It's a homemade movement. The design is very pure, and they have a great success in Japan, for example.
Yeah.
I like this type of product.
Yeah. Anybody else?
No. I have to think about it.
Yeah. But those are two. You know, I bet that if you It's Rolex. It's a funny thing, you know. I mean, everybody knows the name, obviously.
Yes.
And you know, they don't need help from anybody selling watches, obviously. Mm-hmm. But it's weird, you know. When I first got interested in watches, it was very fashionable to say, "Oh, Rolex," you know.
Yeah. No,
Rolex. Who wants a Rolex?
Yeah.
Who wants a Rolex? Yeah. And then, you know, you learn a little bit about watches, and you start to realize these are pretty good, you know. And I don't have to go to the bank and ask for money to buy one.
Exactly. Yeah.
But is that the future of, I mean, for most people, you know, even if you're a doctor in America, family doctor in America makes maybe $220, $250, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you have to pay back your loan for medical school.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you want to get married. Maybe you want to start saving for college for your kid, you know, if you can afford to have more than one. Maybe you need a car to get to and from work. So there's not so much money left.
Yeah.
And, you know, when a really nice Swiss watch is $5,000, $6,000, $7,000.
Mm-hmm.
You can afford, this is something you can afford.
Yeah,
you buy your one nice watch, you're done. You wear it for the rest of your life. Yeah. It makes you happy every time you look at it.
Exactly.
You know, and your patients look at it and they look at your watch and they think, this is a reliable person. He's got a nice watch. But when that watch is $25,000, you have to be an idiot to spend that much money.
Exactly.
You know? Yeah. So like I mean, I think about this in the US, you know, in the support for the big names in Swiss watchmaking, the real, you know, for fine watchmaking.
Yes.
Not industrial watchmaking like you get from Rolex or, you know, on another level from Nomos. The people who used to support Swiss watchmaking, they can't afford it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like a doctor can't afford it.
Yeah.
Lawyer can't afford it. Engineer can't afford it. Not unless you're a very, very, you have to be a big shot lawyer.
Yeah.
You know? So, I mean, without people realizing it, this whole population has, like, they've gone away. And we've lost them for a generation now, and I don't know if they're going to come back.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, and I think the industry is starting to realize that you know, you can't keep the craft of Swiss watchmaking alive on 250,000 ultra high net worth people around the globe. It's too much volatility.
Yeah.
But how do you come back? How do you get those people back?
Yeah. And on top of that, you have the connected watches also.
Mm-hmm. What do you think of those? Have you ever
tried one? Yeah, I tried the Samsung.
Yeah, interesting.
Samsung is a nice looking watch.
Yeah,
very nice. Yeah. I mean, it looks like a watch.
Yeah, it looks like a watch.
It's not the instrument, you know.
Yeah.
But last time I was in Asia, was Hong Kong, Singapore, and Japan. And when I have time, I like to sit and watch the people. Okay, and I watch the people and the young people, let's say the 15, 25, they're not wearing watches anymore.
Mm.
Okay?
Right.
And I would say what will happen with the connected watches, probably this young generation will go in that technology. Okay? And they're going to get used to wear something at their wrist. Okay? And this person, they will improve in their social status. Okay, when they are 29, 30, they will be in charge of the bank or insurance, okay? And they say, well, I'm fed up with this plastic stuff. And
right,
they go
right.
for the real thing.
Yeah.
That's my...
I think, well, I've heard other people say that as well. Like, I mean, at least the smartwatch. Okay, it's the technology is interesting anyway.
Yeah, sure.
And it doesn't give you the same experience as, you know, like you have a... You have a beautiful watch from, let's say, Lange & Söhne, or you have a Rolex.
Yeah.
There's something about the mechanical watch. It's a different experience. It's not the experience that you get from a smartwatch. And you know, maybe the smartwatch is a danger to the low end.
Of course.
You know, like 500 to 1,000. But you know, it's not gonna. You don't stop wearing nice shoes to the office just because you have a pair of boots to wear on the weekend.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
Have you seen the Apple Watch?
Yeah, I saw, but I never tried. I saw this rectangular stuff.
Yeah. You think a watch should be round?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
No. Some nice square watches, or tonneau shape, some nice tonneau shape. But
If you had unlimited time, unlimited resources, what would you want to work on the most?
Let's say tomorrow I finish everything I have on order. I have nothing to do.
That's okay? Right.
I arrive to my workshop and I say, now I can do it, okay? I will make a night.
And you have so much money. Yeah. You don't have to worry about it.
Okay, no, just come here for the pleasure.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. I will work on a pocket-sized tourbillon.
Pocket? Really?
Of course.
A tourbillon?
Because a tourbillon is made for pocket watches.
Yeah.
All the rest is gimmick.
Yeah.
it's true.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you are the tourbillon with your watch. You are the tourbillon. You don't need one.
Right, right. A pocket tourbillon. Anything special about the tourbillon? Or just something very pure?
Very pure.
Yeah.
Took inspiration from what was done in this era in the 20s, 30s, something like that.
Yes. That's amazing. That's amazing. Yeah. Well, thank you very much, Philippe. That was a long conversation. I really appreciate your taking time to talk
welcome.
To us. It's always so interesting to talk to you.
I've been serious enough.
Yeah. Not too serious. Well, and I'll see you at the GPHG.
You know, I always say, at my age, I can say what I think.
Thank God.
So,
thank God. When, if not now? Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
All right, that's about the time where they wrapped things up and went outside, right before Philippe Dufour actually flew a drone around his workshop, which is something you'll have to see to believe. Thanks again to Philippe for taking the time to chat with us, and thanks to Jack for a stellar interview. This week's episode was recorded on location at Philippe Dufour's workshop in the Valais du Jou and was produced and edited by Grayson Korhonen. Please remember to subscribe and rate the show. It really does make a difference. Thank you, and see you again on Monday at the regular time and place.